Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
At our 670 The Score studios, Jordan Malley.
Shout out to Jordan Malley.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't know.
No.
Talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, he's going to make it happen.
And Matt, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls, 5 days a week.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley, along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. You want to respond about this awful Knicks loss over the weekend, or maybe you've got some thoughts on the Mavericks game tonight. Anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Matt, welcome back from the weekend. Just wanted to say it was cool seeing our listeners get our packages that I had sent out earlier in the week, and those were our top Spotify listeners of the entire year. So it is cool to see them tweeting back at us, seeing who they are, and just a little bit of a token of appreciation for our listeners. But how are you, and how was your weekend?
Yeah, what's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Glad to be on the mics with you today, bud. And I agree, it was cool to see some people tweet out the swag bags that we sent them. Always appreciate our loyal listeners. And it was really cool going back and seeing all those people that were screenshotting their most listened to podcasts on Spotify as we rounded out the 2019 year, and seeing all those people who just had Locked Out Bulls, all Locked Out Bulls, all Locked Out Bulls as their queue of Spotify listens. I know that you and I both really appreciate it. And thank God the month of February is over. I don't know if things are going to get much better as we get into March here, but I mean, losing to the Knicks to fall to 1-8 in the calendar month of February and to fall to 20-40 on the season. Is there like anything worse and more embarrassing than putting that stamp on the end of February?
A little adversity, a little tough time, a little uncomfortableness.
It's embarrassing. To say the very least, it's absolutely embarrassing. That Knicks team is absolute garbage. The Bulls didn't even make it close, too. I know the final score looks kind of close, but the game, it was complete trash. For me, one win in February, a complete 180 from what we saw last year. It's a huge disappointment if you're excited about any part of this team right now, or you were last year at this time. I mean, one freaking win in February. And now it looks like Zach LaVine, and we'll talk about injury updates in a minute, but now it looks like Zach LaVine's out with a strained quad. Looks like we're going to get Otto Porter and Wendell Carter Jr. back tonight. But still, it's like, what's there to be excited about over the next 6 weeks of basketball? I mean, it feels like the same element last year where you're watching a lot of G League players play and it was meaningless games while a lot of the younger guys rested. Now it's just kind of a like, okay, we're still going to see these guys go out there and play, but to what end, right? Like, what's the goal here in the last 6 weeks?
Yeah, and we did see some of that change and some of these returning pieces in that loss to the Knicks on Saturday, which made the loss all the more frustrating because you got Wendell Carter Jr. back after his long absence with the ankle. You got Denzel Valentine back after his mysterious, nobody really knew it was there until all of a sudden he was inactive hamstring issue. Valentine played 10 minutes off the bench, 8 points. Wendell, it was really underwhelming. I figured he would, be knocking off some rust in his first action back. And as the Bulls said, they were going to try and keep him to 22 minutes max. He only played 18, although he was put right back into that starting lineup. He was 1 of 5 from the field for just 6 points, did grab 9 rebounds, dish 2 assists, and have 1 block. But he definitely just looked rusty. And that interior defensive presence was really, other than the 9 rebounds, not really there, because you saw the Knicks absolutely demolish the Bulls in the paint all night long. The Bulls gave up a season high, like I want to say 76 points in the paint to this Knicks team that, like, yeah, they have Julius Randle. They got our old pal Taj Gibson, who was getting big buckets early and often. In this one, he finished with 17 points in just 19 minutes. And, of course, another young up-and-comer, Mitchell Robinson, had a 23-10 game for them off the bench. But it's like, dude, these, as you said, it's the Knicks. You give up a season-worst points in the paint to these Knicks and you lose? Yeah, that's the second time this season we've lost to the Knicks, and they're supposed to be one of the few teams we can point to say, well, at least things aren't that bad. I mean, good Lord.
It's just it's almost difficult to talk about this game, too, just because it's like, okay, yeah, Coby White had an okay night off the bench. Zach LaVine ported another 26. Thaddeus Young had 15. But outside of that, like you were saying, I mean, how can you be a Bulls team that shoots 48.6% from three and still get your ass kicked by 10? I don't understand that. The Bulls don't shoot from three like this hardly at all season. So just looking at the pure three-point shooting numbers from last night, I would have said, okay, the Bulls probably won that game if they're shooting 48% from three. But like you said, giving up, I would like to venture and see what the most points in the paint the Bulls have given up during this rebuild has been. I would beg to say that might be one of the most, right? I'm trying to think of other games like where Felicio has had to play, where other bad centers have had to play for this Bulls team while Robin Lopez was out. But this might be the worst. But to me, it was just another case of the Bulls coming out, and actually they had a pretty decent third quarter. You know, we ripped them for their third and fourth quarters a lot. They had a decent third quarter where they stopped the Knicks, outscored them by 10, but it wasn't enough after a terrible first half.
Yeah, and to your point about the points in the paint, I mean, it wasn't just one bad night against the Knicks. The Bulls have been regularly giving up a lot of points in the paint. The absences of Wendell Carter Jr., and then, of course, on top of that, the loss of Chris Dunn, who's probably out for the season with his MCL sprain. You saw the Bulls go from being a team that I think some of it was a little gimmicky with the number of turnovers they forced, but their defensive rating being one of the things that Jim Boylan and John Paxson were trying to hang their hats on to say, hey, we have done some things well this season. But then when you lost Wendell and you lost Chris, that defensive rating plummeted to, I think in the month of February, it was the worst in the league or among the worst in the league. So if you're giving up that many points in the paint every night, even if you're, you know, doing a barrage of three-point shooting, as you mentioned, 17 of 35 from downtown for the Bulls on Saturday night, it doesn't matter because guess what? The Knicks shot 55.3% from the field overall. And a lot of that came on easy looks inside.
It's going to happen when you don't have a backup power. You don't have a decent backup power forward. Somebody can fill that role. And I don't know what the point of playing Adam Akoka 16 minutes was. It's clear now that either the Bulls are doing one of two things, that they just are so apathetic on Valentine at this point that they're like, you know what, it's pointless to play him. He's going to walk at the end of the season. Why let him look good? So they're not playing him any minutes. And or it's, We still kind of like him, but we're going to drive down his value by not allowing other teams to see what he has this season. Maybe we can get him on the cheap in the offseason. But all indications to me, Matt, watching this team play, Valentine's gone at the end of the season. There's no doubt about that. But you don't let him play over guys like Adam Akoka and Ryan Arcidiakono and Shaq Harrison. I know it's been a gripe all season that we've talked about, but and a depleted team at that. Valentine's going to get DNPs now. So is Makoka, as we talked about. Otto Porter's going to return now. But it's just very bizarre lineups again from Jim Boyle. And it's a no wonder. It's no wonder that the Knicks absolutely dominated down low when you've got Daniel Gafford had five fouls and he was in foul trouble early. Thaddeus Young and Wendell Carter Jr. to pick up the load, basically. And only Carter played less than 20 minutes. So you have to have a mix of Felicio and Arcidiakono playing the three, and same thing with Shaq Harrison. Just a recipe for disaster.
I'm sorry, but I mean, and I know Boylan was excited to get pieces back, and he went 11 deep in the first quarter on Saturday night in classic Boylan form. But with Wendell back, even if he's on a minutes restriction, there is, and Gafford healthy, there is no reason to play Felicio any minutes.
He's not,
unless you are outwardly tanking and saying, we are trying to lose basketball games. There is no reason Felicio should see the court ever again this season, provided that Wendell is healthy that Gafford is healthy and some of these other pieces are coming back, because you can go with small ball lineups. We've seen Jim Boylan go with some four and even some five guard lineups at this point of the season. Felicio being out there is completely illogical to me. And we are about to get another piece back. It looks like we still have to wait a little bit longer on Lowry, but our old friend Otto is looking to make his return tonight, Jordan.
I don't have the sound effect, but is there like some crickets I could be playing for that? Because I'm not excited at all, man.
No, I mean, not a cricket sound effect. You got to go with a Lionel Richie jammer.
I mean, sick. Paid the dude last year half his salary at $27 million. Paid him this year to play no games at $26 million. And then going to pay him next year, because he's going to opt in, to pay him another $27 million. And I'm not – and again, I can't focus my anger on Otto Porter Jr. because he's not the one who made the trade last year. And at the time, I backed it, and from what we saw. But one of those things we always talked about last year, and even going into the offseason, Matt, was – Otto Porter's health, but like, that's critical. It's critical to the Bulls season. And sure enough, he gets hurt in the first 2 weeks of the season, kind of cripples the Bulls the rest of the way. They didn't really have a plug and play piece to kind of fill that void. And that was something, if there was a criticism at all from the front office this year, this offseason, even though I thought they had a pretty decent one, was that they didn't fill the one need, and that was at the small forward position, that wing spot where you could plug and play guys at the three and the four. They decided to go with guys that they thought were going to be healthy and decided to, I don't know, allow Jim Boylan to basically exile their only other backup option at the three. So if it sounds like I'm very, very, I don't know, wishy-washy on the idea of Otto Porter coming back tonight, it is because I am. Because at this point, man, I could give a shit less.
Oh, what a great attitude that is. Maybe it's just the Chicago February and early March doldrums that have got you down, Jordan.
I'm not.
Which, by the
I'm
way,
not. I'm not.
A quick word here from our friends as visitarizona.com. This spring, follow your favorite baseball teams, and yes, that includes our Chicago White Sox and Chicago Cubs, to Arizona for Cactus League spring training. Amazing weather and landscapes, exciting outdoor adventure, incredible food. Arizona is the perfect home base for baseball fans. 10 stadiums from 15 major league teams in 75 degree temperatures. All 10 stadiums in the greater Phoenix area within 50 miles of each other. You can meet your favorite Cubs and White Sox players and get their autographs before the games. And that's not all. Check out amazing restaurants and bars nearby, including tons of craft breweries like Four Peaks, Angel's Trumpet Ale House, and Goldwater Brewing Company. Enjoy live music from local and national artists. Explore museums featuring everything from native heritage to modern art to musical instruments from around the world. Bringing the kids to spring training, Arizona's fantastic destination for families. Plenty of fun for kids of all ages, from water parks to horseback rides, wildlife parks, science museums, aquariums, and dude ranches. Plan your spring training getaway at visitarizona.com/springtraining. That's visitarizona.com/springtraining. Yeah, Jordan, to your point about the level of excitement on Otto's return, I think it's just we're too late. Like, it's too little too late. And it's why I was rolling my eyes when Paxson was talking to the media on deadline day, saying, well, we got to get some of these pieces back. Bringing back Otto now is not going to save anything. It's not going to do anything, because we already saw a small sample size last season when we got Otto in the trade, what the Bulls could look like when Zach's healthy, Lowry's healthy, Otto Porter Jr.'s healthy, like all these key pieces, and the Bulls looked halfway decent. So we already know that. We're not going to learn anything by, say, Zach staying in and fighting through whatever nagging injuries he has to keep playing this season in March and April. Maybe getting Lowry back, who practiced with the Windy City Bulls earlier today and might be making a return. And Wendell back and Otto back. Like, we're not going to learn it. We already knew that they can look okay, but still not great when Otto's here. And we didn't learn anything. We're not going to learn anything. All we know, for I would say 99% certainty, is that given the market this summer and given the fact that he is now, even if he comes back, coming off of a season where he missed 75% of this season, Otto's opting in to $28 million more next season, and the Bulls are going to be essentially immobile because of it.
We see a versatile roster. We see some depth on this roster.
The thing that makes me the most angry about this whole thing, and again, it goes back to can't really focus my anger on Otto Porter. It's not his fault he got paid the contract he did, and it's not his fault he got hurt. It's just like you said, at this point, it's too late at this point. Like, okay, what is Otto Porter going to have to say in the next 6 weeks that's going to make any impact on this team at all, right? And then next year, it's like kind of like, okay, Otto Porter's in a contract year next year. Is he going to hang around with this Bulls team where he's been here over a year now? Has he made any real connections with any of these guys in this roster? Does he seem like he's a veteran leader, a veteran piece that we want to keep around for the long term? I don't think so. So really, it's just, again, it's another player on this roster that's kind of a money pit. I don't know if he's going to stay beyond next year. You know, I think he's going to pick up he'd be stupid not to pick up his option for $28 million over the summer, especially coming off an injury. Yeah. But like, it just goes back to what you were saying, Matt. It's like, at this point, why does it matter? And what are the Bulls evaluating now coming down to these next 6 weeks that's really going to have any impact on the offseason or any of the changes that they're going to make or make them feel good about anything that they're going to see? Because we did this same carousel last year. Oh, we evaluated our guys in the last 2.5 months, felt really good about what we have and going into next season. Well, that didn't do you any good this year when the injuries came and fell. All of your backups ended up having to play. Zach LaVine had to carry the load again for this team. So I don't understand what the Bulls are going to see in the next 6 weeks that's going to change their evaluation in this entire season.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's worth mentioning, because I've been hearing a lot of hindsight kind of commentary from Bulls fans on Twitter through this entire season about Otto's lack of availability and also his $28 million option, and the fact that today when we get this news that he's coming back, everyone's collective reaction seems to be like, well, whoopty fucking do, like, who cares? Looking back on when the trade happened, I know that I was, and I believe, if memory serves correctly, you were also in favor of a trade that made sense. The Wizards were trying to get some money off of their books, knowing that with Wall's injury, they were going to be going through a down season or maybe two down seasons. The Bulls, meanwhile, the pieces that they sent away, Jabari was an experiment that was destined to fail, and they only have themselves to blame, but they got rid of a problem. He was a problem. His relationship with Jim was a problem. They got rid of a problem. And then Bobby, our guy, who we love very much, and you know, we had so much fun with him doing our bowling event a couple years back, was just a piece that didn't make sense to keep around. We know that he turned down an extension the Bulls gave him that was fairly lucrative, you know, rumored to be somewhere in the 45 to 50 million over, you know, the course of a 4-year extension. But to offer that to a player whose positions are the same positions as the core or two pieces of your young core with higher ceilings than Bobby Portis, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., keeping him around didn't appear to make a whole lot of sense either. And you addressed a position of need on a team that had no reliable two-way wings to speak of by adding Otto. We knew that there was a little bit of an asterisk there with a player who has injury issues in his rearview mirror and throughout his NBA career. We all knew that Otto was an injury risk. But I think you and me and most Bulls fans, maybe not most, but a certain percentage of Bulls fans, looked at that trade when it happened and said, this makes sense. And now, fast forward to today, because the injuries have crept up again for Otto, everyone seems to be rolling their eyes and saying, oh my God, what a terrible trade that was. I disagree with that take. It was a trade that made sense at the time. And it's unfortunate that Otto hasn't been healthy. But as you pointed out, coming into this season, we knew that if Otto got hurt, it would be an issue.
Kept our flexibility long term, which was also important to us.
I'm with you too. Last year, I said I would have liked to get a little bit more for what we traded out of because of the amount of salary and the injury risk there was of Porter. But at the end of the day, and then watching what he did in February and how he kind of came in and gelled right away with Zach and Lowry, it was like, okay, this makes sense. The only thing, and again, it circles back to not just this trade in general, but over the last 3 or 4 years, kind of how the Bulls have played it after the fact. Like, yes, they dealt for Otto Porter, and then it was like watching him go off for 2 or 3 weeks, it felt like they were justified making this trade, saying that he was a long-term chip. And just the funny thing about like the marketing side of it too is like all of a sudden Otto Porter Jr. is marketed as a key piece of the Bulls rebuild. Chris Dunn is outed out of the picture. It just it didn't add up right. Otto didn't play enough games here to serve as a critical key piece to this rebuild or to tout that to your fans in hope of next year that he's going to stay healthy. He's had an injury every single year that he's been in the NBA. So I think maybe it was a little naive as a fan base to believe that Otto Porter was going to stay fully healthy and be able to play at a career level that he did. Go back and look at his numbers in the 16 games he played for the Bulls last year. Shot a career high in three-point percentage, shot a career high in field goal percentage, shot a ridiculous true shooting percentage of 70-plus percent. Like, those things weren't going to happen again. So maybe we just, again, I think you and I talked about this a lot over the summer, is temper your expectations with what you're going to see. There's going to be some regression from Otto, but injuries happen and it's unlucky and it sucks ass. But I'm with you. I don't think we can relitigate the trade again now a year later and say, oh, well, that was just a shitty trade. Let's blame it on the front office. That's not fair to do. It was just unlucky, like the Bulls have been for the last, what, 10 years? It's just unlucky.
Yeah, it is. And I know along with that unlucky, Bulls fans have for years now been clamoring about the team's medical staff and their strength and conditioning staff and the team doctors. And why is it that this team can just never stay healthy? And we roll our eyes when John Paxson or Gar, when he was actually allowed to talk, would say things like, well, you know, we want our players to be in our building. And during the offseason, we wanted to be in our building and take advantage of all the wonderful things
they've been in this building
we have on staff that will allow them to optimize, maximize their likelihood of being healthy for an entire season. And that just doesn't happen. And it hasn't happened. We've been dealing with the opposite for several years now. So I understand Bulls fans' frustrations, and we haven't heard anything. While we have heard about this, you know, new voice that they're looking to bring in to change up the front office structure a little bit, we've heard nothing about maybe making changes to the medical staff. So, yeah, maybe some of this is unlucky. But as I said before, we did know that Otto was an injury risk player. He had that label to him.
In this building.
I don't know. Like, we'll see. We'll see if Otto finishes out and plays the remaining 22 games this season. And if he does, great. And if he has a healthy offseason and comes into the next season healthy, great. But, like, theoretically, he came into this season healthy and then, like, got a foot issue in the ninth game that morphed and changed, you know, half a dozen different ways before we actually got the real answer to what was going on. So it was frustrating because it was confusing. And I think that that is a regularity with the Bulls when it comes to what they tell the media and by that channel, the fans, about players of theirs that are dealing with injuries. It's the confusion around it because they say one thing and then we get another as far as timelines of injuries, as far as what exactly the injuries are. And that's the frustrating part.
Here in the Advocate Center.
Like, silver lining. Otto's back. Yay. Hooray. But now we might be without Zach LaVine against the Mavs tonight, Jordan.
Here in the Advocate Center. In this building. Here in the Advocate Center. In this building.
Oh, my God. Kill me.
It sucks. Of course. Zach goes down, and, you know, that's fine. He's been carrying this team. I'm surprised, knock on wood, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten hurt. You know, the surprising stability of Zach LaVine is something we don't talk about a lot either, too. This dude fucking came off an ACL injury, what, just shy of 2 years ago? And the amount of carrying the load for the Bulls he's done over the last 2 years is unbelievable. It's an unbelievable task to ask a dude that just came off an ACL injury. Where in the league is there another dude that's been asked to do something like that? Maybe Russell Westbrook is the last person I can think of. Like, Kristaps Porzingis tore his ACL. He wasn't asked to be the centerpiece again. He got shipped off to Dallas, and now is the second piece alongside Luka. I can't think of anybody else who's torn their ACL, had a major injury, and then all of a sudden said, yeah, you know what? Now you have to be our number one. Come on, you have to carry the load for the entire team. So there's been a lot of shit stacked up against Zach LaVine. Matt, before we got out of here, though, I wanted to shift our focus and talk a little bit about Carter opening up over the weekend, talking about a potential position change. This kind of surprised me a little bit, but not significantly. I know he had talked a little bit about maybe his play becoming better if he moved back to a position he felt a little bit more comfortable with. I know we talked a lot about him in college playing the center position, kind of allowing Marvin Bagley to play his more comfortable position, but What do you think about this, and what kind of mess does this put the Bulls in, or kind of weird position does this put the Bulls in, with Lauri Markkanen obviously having him play power forward as well, asking of Wendell, hey, you know what? Maybe this isn't a good idea that you move positions. We want you to continue to focus on the center position. Or is this an opportunity for the Bulls, who we've always heard talks about them wanting to convert Lauri into a center, to kind of see if they can flip-flop positions with both of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think there is some usefulness to seeing, while Lauri is out and he's still working his way back and maybe he'll come back at some point, but in the meantime, with Wendell back in the fold and Daniel Gafford healthy, I've heard some Bulls fans saying, hey, like, why not play those two together? You know, obviously that would likely shift Thad back to a bench role, and Thad has been playing much better since joining the starting role, and I think is a lot happier with his increased minutes. But at least to see Gafford being a traditional, like, old-fashioned center who's not stretching the floor in any way, and he does two things. He sets screens and he runs to the rim on the offensive end, and he blocks shots on the defensive end. Seeing what Wendell can do, if anything, to expand his game and open up his game offensively by shifting him to the four. I just think we have seen so little evidence of Wendell doing that. And I'm not saying that that's Wendell's fault. I'm saying because of the position and the fact that he's been playing primarily the center position, and especially this season that Jim Boylan has neutered him offensively, there's not a whole lot for me to point to say I have faith that that would work. And maybe, yes, some of it Saturday was just rust because it was his first game in like a month and a half or whatever, but we've seen Wendell have issues offensively. A lack of confidence to shoot. And also, I've always thought that he has bad hands, and he hasn't really gotten any better with that. So, as much as I want to believe in Wendell and this tremendously high ceiling that a lot of people have and believe in him, I don't know if shifting him to the four is going to work. And whether you try it now with Wendell and Gafford, at least you can see, maybe if you give Wendell a few more, you know, chains on his leash to see what you have. But it's not as important to see what Wendell and Gafford could theoretically do paired together in the front court. It's much more important, assuming we all still are planning on Markkanen and Wendell both sticking around in this rebuild, to see how those two pair together, and not with Wendell at the five and Lauri at the four, but switching that. And I'm sorry, from what we've seen with Lauri at the five on the defensive end, and what we've seen from Wendell offensively in totality, I don't know if swapping them helps you. I really, really don't.
The only thing I can think of is Carter's been overly frustrated by the fact that he's gotten two injuries at the same position now, which, I mean, it can come at any position that he plays in on the floor. But the other thing that I always thought about, and even going back to last year, was the foul trouble that he gets in. It seemingly is almost to a point where it's a nuisance to watch, just because a lot of the fouls that Carter has to give up are because his teammates blow defensive assignments. He's got to make up for somebody blowing a defensive assignment, maybe on a run, coming on a 3-on-2. Maybe somebody misses an assignment completely and he's got to cover for them and foul. I feel like he's frustrated more than anything about that. And that's part of an issue of his game. And maybe it does free him up a little bit if he switches positions, not to feel like he'll get in foul trouble as much. But I think in combination with that, too, Lauri Markkanen's not a great defender at all. And pairing him alongside Wendell, I think, puts a lot more pressure on Wendell to have to be the defense-first type of guy and have to bail guys out when they make bad defensive moves on that side of the ball. So maybe that's in part two of it, but I'm with you. I've been a little disappointed, but again, it's hard to say to be disappointed in a young guy and blame him, because it's not about his performance, just the fact that we haven't been able to see him in totality for 2 years straight. He's missed a huge chunk of time last year, missed a huge chunk of time this year. It's the same thing with all the rest of the young guys that we have on our team. To some extent, every single one of them has missed a huge chunk of time throughout their first time with the Bulls. I mean, even go down to the guys on the bench, Denzel Valentine, Chandler Hutchison, Otto Porter, who you acquired. I mean, every young guy that the Bulls have had in some stretch has had a significant injury that's costed them 4, 6, 8 weeks of their time here with the Bulls. And it's kind of screwed our evaluation. It's screwed the Bulls' evaluation of this entire team. So I don't know if that helps Wendell. If he feels like it helps him and you feel like he's a cornerstone piece of this team, I think you leave every option open this summer to see and let him and Lowry battle it out. If that's what's going to help Wendell ultimately improve.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly see the logic to that. And I guess the final thought that I would offer is I've heard some fans say playing Wendell at the four makes more sense than playing Wendell at the five because he's so undersized as a traditional center. Like Wendell is 6'9", like, and he is a flat 6'9". He's not like 6'9¾". He's not closer to 6'10". He's just not that big for a traditional center role. And so I've heard some fans say, well, wouldn't it make more sense then to swap him and Lowry? Lowry's closer to being a legit 7-footer. But Wendell has the skills and the IQ on the defensive end that Lowry does not. So I think that Wendell can mask his lack of size with his skill. And we are seeing more and more, season by season, a shift away from having traditional centers on the floor at all. A lot of teams are going a lot of small ball lineups. And I think that trend will only continue as we move forward and as Wendell and Lowry both develop and reach the like the prime years of their career, assuming that both of them will be here in Chicago for those prime years of their career. So I don't see the Wendell is undersized as too much of an issue. I think it's a valid point when saying, well, maybe he would be more suited to play the four. But I think just saying, oh, well, Wendell's 2 inches shorter than Lowry is not a good enough reason when you think about what Lowry can't do defensively, whereas Wendell and the way that he anchors this defense, the size difference, in my opinion, means and matters way less.
I think it's a good point that you bring up, and I think maybe the decision marker is whether or not Jim Boylan comes back and he is the head coach again next season, and this is who they truly plan to try and build this team around and use as head coach as Jim Boylan, which is bizarre too, because think about the way that the Bulls had success last year. It was Robin Lopez banging bodies down low, right? Wendell doesn't do that. I feel like Wendell, for the most part on defense, does very much that, but he's a different type of player than Lopez was, and Boylan found a lot of success by getting bailed out when he couldn't find a guy that could knock down a three, getting bailed out by Robin Lopez being able to go one-on-one with a guy inside the rim, and having a decent amount of success doing that. So is that still Boylan's strength, is playing to a guy that can play down low and go one-on-one with those guys? I don't know if that's Wendell's game or if he can develop that type of game, but I think that ultimately maybe will be the pinpoint of whether or not they decide to make changes to where Wendell is playing, or maybe they bring in a different coach that the philosophy is different and it plays out different for Wendell. But I don't know. You've got your number 7 pick already asking to change positions. You drafted the guy 3 years ago that plays the same position. Daniel Gafford looks really good, which I like you say, going back to that, I'd like to see those two get some time to play together over the next 6 weeks or so. It's made a whole lot of a mess for this Bulls team. And I don't know. They've got, like the Bulls have said, they've got a lot of evaluating to do. Hell yeah, they do. They've a lot of evaluating to do over the next 6 weeks.
And let's pray to God that somebody useful is actually willing to come in, take the job, and take the reins of some of that evaluation, because we are all fairly confident in the fact that John Paxson, Gar, and Jim are not the ones to be doing that evaluating anymore. And just a recent example of that is, you know, for a final thought on Wendell, the frustrating season that we saw him have before getting hurt and not really progressing but regressing offensively is that, from what I've heard, the Bulls were really keen on Wendell bulking up and adding muscle to his frame this past offseason. That was his offseason instructions after his rookie year. So he did that. And Wendell added like about, you know, 12 or 15 pounds of muscle to his frame, supposedly so that they could make getting him looks in the post and in the paint a more important part of their offense. And then, whoop, surprise, Jim Boylan decides to install this completely new offensive system that's multi-ball handlers and a lot of corner threes and looks at the rim, but completely alienates Wendell Carter Jr., who did not get to work on his post game basically at all while healthy this season. So the Bulls instructed Wendell to do one thing about his body to accentuate the strengths of his game and develop his game, and then installed a Jim Boylan system that did the exact opposite. So when it comes to evaluating, that is the latest example of, for the love of God, get somebody else in here who can help develop these young players instead of hindering their development.
We've added Jerry Grant, who we talked about.
I'm with you, Matt. Looking at just, you know, I was surprised to see how many double-doubles Carter had early on in the season. It feels like it's been forever since we got to watch Carter play. But, you know, even to your point on that, is the nights that he wasn't the main focus or even the second main focus on the team in terms of offense, I mean, with field goal attempts around 6, 7, 8, he was still putting up double-doubles every single night. So the value is there. It's just the fact that Jim Boylan hasn't played to any of his strengths. But I don't know. Maybe he will in the next 6 weeks and we'll see something different. But I wouldn't hold your breath. That's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thanks so much for listening to us today. You can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, and on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. For Matt and Jordan, we are saying we are out of here, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. Be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.
If I can endure the last minute, the last timeout, and coach my team, I think the other team can too.